Hi, welcome to the Barry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm Natalie.
And I'm Jason.
And today we have a very special guest that is, it's been a long time coming. We have Dr. Connie Stapleton, author, food addiction therapist. Hi, Connie. Thank
Hi
you for being
guys, it's super exciting to be here. Thanks so much.
Of course, we are so excited. We've been talking to you for a while now, and we finally got you on to talk about a very important topic in the bariatric community and beyond, honestly, which is about how to say no to certain foods before, after surgery, all stages of life. For those of you who may be listening or thinking about listening, you may wonder about certain foods, abstaining from certain foods. Maybe you've identified a food that you're just having a hard time saying no to, or maybe you're having a hard time stopping when you're full. And if you've ever wondered if maybe you're struggling with food addiction, this episode really is for you. We're hoping to dive in pretty deep with Connie, and we think this is going to be a good one for you. Connie, would you mind just introducing yourself for those who may not know you?
Sure. And I, first of all, thank you guys, really. I think what you've done with Bear Nation is the word of a few years ago, unprecedented. Pretty impressive to watch and just to, sit back in awe, seriously, of what you guys
Thank
have
you.
done. I came into this community, the bariatric community, about 20 years ago, and it was a very different landscape. There wasn't social media. I don't even know. I guess there was like AOL, but there was not this, huge explosion of social media in the bariatric community. And it seemed like after the pandemic, it was like, what happened? Where did all these amazing new people come from? Because for a long time, I was with this group of people that had been around for a long time. So it was really exciting to see a lot of this new fresh blood. But I came in 20 years ago, and when I started, this is how long ago it was, they were still doing open surgeries. Like if somebody had the gastric bypass, it was open, stem to stern. And the robotic stuff, that all came about after I got started in this. So we're talking a long time ago. And at that time as well, there were very few people who were doing any kind of mental health stuff in the bariatric community. The ASMBS was training dietitians, and there were support groups within centers, but that was about all that was going on. And when I started, I felt really fortunate because I came from a background of working with addiction and recovery. I've been through treatment myself 30 some years ago, and so I knew that, and I've struggled with eating issues and a lot of different things earlier in my life before I went back to school to become a psychologist, which is how I got there. But I knew that bariatric surgery was going to be for a lot of people like coming out of treatment was for me, that without some aftercare, without somebody teaching me, this is how you live life without your coping skill, your coping methods, which were really unhealthy. Right. For me, it was alcohol, and then it was food, and then it was work, and then it was all of these different things. Ultimately, it was prescription pain medication. And I knew I needed help. I had three kids, I had a husband, so I ended up in treatment, which for those of you who've had bariatric surgery, I equate the two a lot because it's the demarcation of going into a whole new phase of life. And had it not been for the aftercare, I wouldn't have learned the skills of how to boost my self-esteem or how to learn to like myself or how to set boundaries with myself and say no to myself and what to do instead of turning to a mood-altering substance and how to have a healthy relationship and how to deal with those changing relationships. So I was like, wow, this is right up my alley. And there are thousands of people working in the alcohol and drug recovery community, but there are very few in the bariatric community doing what I was doing at the time. Now there are many, and thank God for that, because, there's a huge need for it. So that's how I got started in it. And as I went along, I developed, here's probably what I'm most proud of, is that when I started doing pre-surgical evaluations, I knew that people were not ready to hear some of what they needed to know for after surgery. I knew that. But I also knew that it would be helpful if somebody had at least planted a seed, so that when these things, when relationships changed, when people started treating them differently, when they had to find, you know, weight loss surgery doesn't treat emotional eating. Weight loss surgery doesn't treat low self-esteem, all those sorts of things. So I made a series of 10 videos and they were called Mind Prep. And I made them at home in my living room and my son recorded them. And what I did was I required everybody to watch the first five, which are pre-op videos, before they had surgery. And eventually I had them professionally recorded. And still to this day, before I will okay somebody for surgery, they have to watch these videos, because it talks about, these are a lot of the likely changes that are coming up. And you need to know. And people at first are like, oh, geez, another hoop to jump through. But then they're like, oh my God, I'd never thought about this. I'm so grateful. So that's kind of what I do. And I do the pre-surgical evaluations, and then I spend most of my time helping people learn the skills they need to live a fully happy life without leaning to, you know, food or any other unhealthy coping skill, and learn to live life without, you know, like blinders.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because my wife is also is an alcohol and drug abuse therapist, and she's a counselor. And it took her a minute to really connect those two. Like, as she was speaking through the steps and the stages of the treatment for post-op, she's like, wait a minute. And she connected it, and she went back and she's like, why is nobody else, like, we're not really talking about it in this way like we should have. It really needs to be brought to light that it is the same path. It's the same thing. So that's it. She leads an addiction transfer class in Berry Nation, and she's used a lot of those things as kind of the stepping stone to start that. So
thank goodness, because people do need a place, because for a lot of people that's real, and it takes, you know, it takes place so subtly. So I'm so glad to know that.
Yes, we love having Sarah on as one of our experts. I've learned so much from her. Connie, I remember reading your book, Weight Loss Surgery Does Not Cure Food Addiction, during my pre-op.
Oh, and awesome. I am
so glad that I did. It was a Bariatric Society book club book. Awesome. While I was in pre-op, and I just remember being like, oh my, like mind blown the whole time. So I'm so stoked for this conversation, and I think we should just dive in. What do you guys think?
Dive in. First, let me tell you something, though. You know those mind prep videos that I make everybody watch? I turned those into a book. But what happened is I kept adding and adding and adding material. So the mind prep is huge. But I'm telling you what, that has got a ton of good information in it.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I'll add it to my list, because that first book, I still reference it to this day.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Of course. All right, Connie, we here at Berry Nation like to start out with definitions, so that as we continue on, we're all on the same page throughout the conversation. So this is kind of a two-part question. What does it mean to abstain from something? And then why is it often seen as like a negative in our minds, society, bariatrics, all of that?
So I will answer in the words of Dana Carvey, ain't gonna do it. So abstaining means I'm not gonna do it. This is not an option for me. And why it's often thought of as a bad thing is people sometimes feel like this is being imposed upon them.
Hey, this is April, one of your hosts. If the Berry Nation podcast has made a positive impact on your life, become a supporter. For $5 a month, you can help us produce this podcast. Your support would mean the world to us. Visit us online at berrynationpodcast.com to learn more.
But if you can think of, this is a choice that I am making, as opposed to I can't. Because if you've dieted for much of your life, you know, you've heard you can't. This is bad. This is a bad food. This is good food. All of that stuff that makes things you want to repel them. So if somebody says, oh, you're abstaining, it's like, who's making you do this? What horrible entity is requiring this of you? So that's why it's thought of as a bad thing. But if you think of, I abstain because it's a choice I make for my well-being, whole different ball game. My mind receives it much more differently, much more openly.
Yeah,
So
that makes
it's an
perfect sense.
ownership. It's an
Absolutely.
ownership
It's a
piece.
choice, not a mandate.
Yeah, I know Jason and I and April have talked about this a lot. There are foods that we have had to choose whether or not to keep in our house, our diet, everything, and it was a choice. And I feel like once you do make it a choice, it does become a little, it's not that it's easy, it's not going to be easy, but it makes it a little bit easier because of that ownership piece.
Exactly. And what's an interesting saying is this kind of choice is not for people who need it. It's for people who want it. Because if you feel like you need it, again, it's that somebody telling you what you should do or you ought to do. And all those words that say, F that, I'm not doing that. So it's for people who want it. And I always tell people, you got to be on fire for this. You got to want it so badly.
Absolutely. That's 100% right. All right, now we have a question. We're doing a new segment here in Berry Nation forum from our community members. So this is a community question directly from Rachel. And Rachel asked, what are the signs that someone struggles with food addiction? How can we tell if this is an addiction or something else?
Okay, I love that question. And let me just say, regardless of what you call it, here's the bottom line. If it's a problem, it's a problem. Because people get very hung up on the word addiction. People get very, it's like another word that you want to repel. And I was in Australia last year, and I spoke at their version of the ASMBS conference, and there was a surgeon in there, and he wanted to argue with me about the definition. He's like, well, Connie, it just sounds like what you're defining as addiction could be described as obesity. And I'm like, okay, if that's what you want to call it, then you feel free to call it that. Some people are like, this is an eating disorder, or this is disordered eating, and I refuse to call it an addiction. I don't care. I am not hung up on the vernacular. It's like, you call it what you call it, but you know, if you're being honest with yourself, if this is a problem for me, it's a problem for me. So there you have that. Now, if we're going to go by the formal criteria for addiction, there are 11 of them. And what I used to do is if I'd speak at a support group, then I would go in with the criteria. They didn't, of course, food addiction has not yet been named a thing. However, I am super excited because I was just on a panel of people from around the world, and we are trying to get food addiction into the ICD, which is where they categorize. And so we're supposed to celebrate that triumph in London in the spring, crossing our fingers. Because if you've ever struggled with food addiction, then you understand it's a real thing. But think of it like this, and then I'll get back to the addiction criteria. If you are not an alcoholic, it's really hard to understand, well, why don't you just not order a drink? Right? Because it doesn't make any sense. Because addiction doesn't make any sense. It's illogical as hell. So when people don't understand the disease of obesity, they're like, well, why don't they just damn push away from the table? Clearly, they have no understanding of the disease process of obesity or of addiction. And sometimes those two are commingled, sometimes they are not. But in addiction, a simple, simple definition is continuing to do something that you know is causing you problems. It may be a physical problem, it may be a relationship problem, it may be a psychological problem, but you still do it. So let's say the doctor has said, you know, you've got to get 20 pounds off, or, you know, you are at high risk for a stroke or a heart attack or whatever it happens to be. And you genuinely want to, like, you want to get this weight off and you want to give up the simple carbs and you want to give up the sugar, and but you can't. Somehow you just can't do it. If you have a problem and you know what's causing the problem, but you can't let go of it, I'm going to call that either an emotional dependency, or you might have a physiological addiction. And there are some definitions there that other professionals would disagree with me. I love Dr. Vera Tarman's work on food addiction. She wrote a great book called Food Junkies, where she explains the biology related to food addiction. I don't think that she believes in emotional dependency or an emotional addiction to food. I absolutely do, and I'll tell you the difference. Some people, if they eat sugar or that really highly processed food that makes you want more and more and more, that's created that way to get you to the bliss point, all that stuff, it's engineered that way. If that triggers something in your brain, and then you are obsessed, you can't get the cravings off your mind. Or if you eat a little bit of sugar and then you just want to eat more, and then you're just kind of pulled toward it, there's probably a physiological thing going on there. And people who have this will tell you, when I quit eating sugar, that all goes away. The brain fog disappears. To me, that is a good indication that there's a biological trigger. I didn't have to drink in the morning because I would shake. I didn't have that kind of addiction, but I didn't have an off switch either. So there was a biological thing that said, when I drink, I just don't know when to stop. I didn't stop, right? Until I would pass out. There's something biological going on there. But my emotional dependency on food, alcohol, pain medication was greater than the physiological one, which meant I felt like I needed it to be social. I felt like I needed it to feel like I fit in. I felt like I needed it to calm down. So I depended on a substance, and some people it's a behavior, it's shopping or it's gambling or it's, you know, I always say an addiction is like an umbrella. So you have an umbrella, here's my umbrella, and each one of the spokes represents a different substance or behavior that can change your mood. They're mood altering. They make us feel better. And so we turn to them when we don't know how to cope with stress. What's the number one reason for regain, people tell me? Life, stress, right? So weight loss surgery does not treat life stress. Weight loss surgery does not treat emotional eating. Weight loss surgery does not treat emotional dependency on food. So if people don't have an understanding of this, and if this is a problem for them, that's where we get into the transfer addiction, right? Because I no longer have this substance, but I need something.
Hey, Berry friends, it's Natalie, and it is the holiday season. Are you struggling to find the perfect gift for your Berry pal? Maybe you've finally realized that you also deserve to get something special this holiday season. Why not give the gift of bariatric support with an annual membership to the Berry Nation support community? With over 80 live ways to connect, learn, and grow with bariatric dietitians, mental health experts, movement specialists, surgeons, and peers, you and your loved ones are bound to find the support needed for a successful and supported bariatric life. For just over $1 a day, you and your Berry fam can enjoy the gift that keeps on giving with the Berry Nation Support Community annual membership. Head to the Berry Nation website, berrynation.com, to learn more.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's what I tell people. I'm sorry. I'll shut up in a minute.
Blech. No, you're good. You're good.
Word vomit. So if people go into weight loss surgery and they have the disease of obesity on one hand, and if they have the disease of addiction on the other hand, the surgeon treats the obesity and the addiction is left alive and well, going, where's my thing? Where's my substance? What am I gonna do? And then it finds something else.
Yeah. It's good that you mentioned the fact though that people do have that stigma around being called an addict of anything. This addiction as a whole has its own dark cloud around it. And I was one of the people that never believed I was a food addict at all. Didn't matter what, how much I ate, didn't matter what I ate, didn't matter the circumstance. I never believed it until two separate instances happened
Ooh,
that I
what
can
else?
vividly remember in my mind. One was I went to a cardiologist appointment at 44 years old, and they told me I was actively dying. My heart was jacked. I was really putting myself through it. And instead of doing something positive about that diagnosis, I went and got six White Castle burgers and ate them all at one time in one sitting when I was done with that appointment because it was going to make me feel better.
Yeah.
And then the second was is the very last time that I ate to excess in this way was I remember sneaking out of work at lunch because I used to have a group of people that I would eat lunch with at work, and I only snuck out on my own when I knew I was going to be doing something I shouldn't be doing. So I snuck out, I drove to McDonald's, I got, four triple cheeseburgers, a four-piece nugget, and a large fry and a drink, sat in my car and ate it. But the whole time I was on this mission to get this food, I was playing in my head scenes from movies like this is what, addicts feel like when they're going to score drugs and use when they're really having a breakdown when they have to have the substance. Like in my mind, I played it step by step as I went through the drive-through, as I paid my money, the rush of the feeling I got when I got back to the parking lot and dove into that bag. In my mind, I played that over and over again. And then I hid my trash in the dumpster outside so nobody knew what I had for lunch. And I could just come in and say, oh, I was on a call. I had to go do it, run an errand on lunch. And I didn't have to think about it because nobody knew what I did but me.
Wow,
So
let
I
me tell
wasn't
you
held
how
accountable.
powerful. That
Yeah, I
is
was.
so freaking powerful that you had the insight and the self-awareness to recognize that. That doesn't happen very often. Good for you.
No. And our dear friend Maddie, on Instagram, Maddie5088, she mentioned one time on her stories that she had the fast food chronicles. And I was like, oh, duh, of course I have the fast food chronicles. Jason had the fast food chronicles. You go to all of these different fast food restaurants, you eat in excess to make yourself feel better, or because that's what you are craving. You throw away the evidence. No one's gonna know. No one's gonna Who's gonna know? The fast
Exactly.
food chronicles. But that can be that food addiction, like what you're saying, Connie, is seeking it out.
Let me tell you, when I went into treatment, so I didn't go into treatment because I was an addict. That wasn't me.
Course
How could I be an addict?
not.
I went in because my whole family is full of addiction. And so the place where I went had these two tracks, and one of them was for the addict, the loser. And the other one was for the concerned, oh, the concerned family member, the martyr. So there I go into the concerned family member program, right? Yeah. About 2 weeks into it, they're like, you are missing something, woman. So they take me to see Joanne. And I'm like, well, bring her on. Because Joanne was the person who did the evaluations. I'm like, you come on, Joanne. I'm not an addict. You should meet my family. So Joanne does the interview with me, and I answer honestly because I'm thinking, well, at that point, I rarely drank, but I was taking the pills. So nobody knew that part. So I answered honestly. And she looked at me and she said, well, Connie, no wonder nothing's making sense that comes out of your mouth. You're a drug addict and an alcoholic. And I looked at her
How
and
dare you?
I was really thinking, have you met my family?
Right.
I drink nothing like they do. Those people are addicts. And I'll tell you what
Yeah.
happened in about a matter of 60 to 90 seconds. I had the most peaceful feeling come over me that I have ever had in my life. And it was finally, I understand why my behavior goes so far against my values. Why I do these things when I'm drinking that I don't ascribe to, you know, why I live and do things I don't want to do. And I was like, it wasn't like an excuse for my behavior all of a sudden. It was like, well, now I can do something about it because I know what it is. And that was the first day of the rest of my life. And that's when things changed. And it was 3 to 4 years of solid therapy before I decided to go back to school to learn to do what I do.
That's so awesome that you got to that place, though, because a lot of times it takes a lot longer than that for people to realize. Because like you said, I mean, people think like that. Well, I'm at least I'm not as bad as, you know, this other person I know.
Oh,
that
yeah.
could be way worse. Like, I'm not selling my body for prescription pills. So that can't be like, I'm not an addict. Like, I don't do that stuff. So I'm good. Like,
yes, it was that word, addict. It's like, oh, no. Oh, yes. So that's why I say, if you don't like the word, don't use it. Just say this food or this group of foods is the problem for me. What am I going to do about it? Who cares what the terminology is?
Yeah, we do get very hung up in that terminology. We want labels for things. And once we find one that is the quote unquote right one, we think we have to adhere to it. Which is difficult to move through. As you said, Connie, it can be hard.
And there are criteria, right? I used to go into the support groups and I would take the criteria for alcohol dependence and I would change the wording so that it was like, you know, do you eat more than you planned to in a given setting? Those kinds of things. Well, lo and behold, then they came up with the Yale addiction scale, right? So, and that's exactly what they did. They took that same criteria and they switched it to food instead of alcohol. And you can do it with any kind of troublesome behavior. So there are 11 criteria, but when you talk about it in layman's terms, is this causing you a problem and you know it's a problem? Like, do you have fights with your spouse about your alcoholism or your gambling or your shopping or your whatever it is? You know, have other people made comments? There's a saying, if 10 people tell you you have a tail, you might want to turn around and take a look. So if your mom's saying, you know, I'm a little worried about you, and your spouse is saying, that kind of concerns me, and your boss is saying, dude, what's going on? You know, so if you're getting kind of feedback and your doctor is saying, you might want to go, oh, this might be a problem.
I wanted to make sure we had time to highlight. I know, Jason, you've had to come to terms with some abstinence or saying no to some foods. Do you want to shed some light on that for us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because one of the things I had really talked about was, you know, after my original C surgery, you know, 3.5 years ago, I really thought I was doing a pretty good job, so I could kind of start kind of, you know, introducing some things back in that may not be 100% to plan, but things that I don't just go, you know, nuts over. And so one of those things was like Cheez-Its, crackers, I'm a junkie for. And so those can't come back. I can't do that because I don't know how to just eat a handful of Cheez-Its and go on about my day. I was going and buying family boxes and plowing through those in like a day and a half. So I, those have to go. Those have to stay gone this time after my revision. And sugar as well. I cannot, because I will, if you leave anything remotely sugar related in my reach, I will eat it all. It's not just a let me have a couple of Oreos. It's let me have a couple of sleeves of Oreos until they are gone. And then I will go to the store, seek them out, buy more of them, and eat them too. I know. So I've realized that there's just going to have to be things that I just can't do. And I'm going to have to find the, you know, because there are other things that give you the semblance of eating those things. So there are protein shakes that do the same that are actually going to be beneficial to me in my post-op journey. There's lots of, you know, protein bars. There's things that mimic the things that I go after that, you know, may not be 1,000% healthy, but at the same time, it's close. It's not a Milky Way. So let's go that. So there's definitely going to be things that I'm really going to watch out for this time just simply because I have a lot more education on the situation this time than I did last time. And
Same.
also, I just really want to make sure that I honor myself in the best way possible moving forward because of all the work that I've put in to get here.
Hey, this is April. Jason, Nat, and I love making this podcast for you each and every week, but we need your help to keep it going. Become a Berry Nation podcast supporter for $5 a month and help us produce this show. Visit us online at berrynationpodcast.com to join us.
Oh, those words. I just want to say those words are powerful. And I do believe that a person has to get to a place and depends where you start within your journey. When I first started my recovery journey, I didn't honor myself. I didn't honor much about myself at all. And so when we're at a place where we don't feel our own value or trust it or buy into it, it's hard for us to treat ourselves in a way that's going to reflect that. So it takes some time to say, I do value myself and I refuse to treat myself that way. So it's kind of a hand-in-hand thing. But you know, you were talking about setting boundaries for yourself earlier. Well, I don't know if that was the exact words, but it's made me think of that. You know, when you choose to abstain from something, it's kind of like parents set boundaries for children to keep them safe, right? We put up the gate at the top of the stairs so the child doesn't fall down the stairs. We make them wear a life jacket in case they fall in the water. You know, we do those things to keep our children safe, bedtimes, hopefully some screen limits, right? And if we can think of it for that with ourselves, like, you know, Jason, if you say, I choose not to put sugar into my body because that will keep me safe and I am valuable enough to keep safe from that so I don't go down a path that's not healthy for me. So think about it like, you know, I'm just keeping myself safe.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and that's absolutely the conversation I had to have with myself, because one of the things that Natalie brought kind of to our attention at one point was the trust we have in ourselves and that we're able to have in ourselves. And I trust myself both sides of it. I trust myself to know that what's going to happen if I allow myself a little bit, I'm going to use it to excess. So I'm trusting myself to not do any of that because I know exactly what's going to happen. So, I mean, I've, you know, spoiler alert, I've seen the end of that movie and I know what
yeah.
happens. So what I'm going to do now is I get a chance to rewrite the ending, and I'm going to do that very thing, because there's no, once I started reading kind of the effects of, you know, I was having a lot of swelling going on at the time, like right before my revision. And when my wife kind of read off some of the deeper effects of sugar and the fact that it can mimic sodium in a lot of ways and cause a lot of that swelling, I was like, well, no wonder I feel like, you know, a balloon about to pop, because I'm consuming way more sugar than the average human can or should. And that explains everything. So,
and that self-awareness is so critical, and that willingness to own that. Oh, it's hard, but that's where you got to get to.
You yes. really do. And I've watched Jason go through those stages, and he's watched me go through stages with other foods. I've had pasta. There have been moments in time where I'm like, I just don't do pasta. I can't have it in my house. I can't do the bonza. I can't do any substitutes because it'll remind me of pasta and then I'm going to want pasta. It's all a learning journey. And there's one more question from Rachel from the Berry Nation membership community that's a follow-up to this question that I think is really important to ask. Is abstinence or abstaining from certain foods something that you can experiment with? How would you go about doing that?
I absolutely encourage people to experiment with it, because how are you going to know, right? Just like you learned about the pasta, just like Jason learned about the sugar, how are we going to know? Can I have just a little or can I not? You've got to find that out. And unfortunately, in a lot of cases, unless it's absolutely going to kill you, then don't freaking experiment with it. But If you're like, oh, you know, I think I can eat a Chips Ahoy, it's not an Oreo. Chances are good you can't, but maybe you got to learn that lesson yourself. And doesn't it suck that people don't learn from our lessons? I just wish they could and would, but it's not how life works. And people say, what about sugar substitutes? You're going to have to find that out on your own, right? Because for some people, that will trigger the same kind of thing as sugar, because, like with the pasta, it reminded you of that. So, yes, absolutely experiment. But I would encourage you to have somebody like you guys did with each other to say, yeah, so that, same ending, bad story. And be honest, right?
And it's not irreversible. That's the thing that people need to understand. Like, you can always, check yourself, kind of realize what's going on. But you, like it, the honesty with yourself is going to be the biggest part. Is you have
Absolutely.
to realize, you have to tell yourself the truth and be like, yeah, this is not okay. This is not going like I thought it would. All things are bad. The signs are going off. All the red flags. Like, let's stop. And you can always just turn back around, get back to basics, do what you got to do to get yourself back on track. That's not. It's not a just a, oh, I've eaten three cookies and so now I'm a horrible person and I'm not going to do well at this journey. It doesn't work quite like that.
And I think, it is important to be kind to yourself along the way. But when you know. And then I think we need to hold ourselves accountable. It doesn't mean you're not going to do it perfectly, but the kind of support we need when Jason says to Natalie, okay, Natalie, I know that this is off limits for me. I choose for this to be off limits for me. So when, if you eat a couple sleeves of Oreos, Natalie doesn't go, it's okay, honey, it'll be all right. Now, maybe to say, you know what? I get it, but it's not okay. And what can I do to help you from doing that again? So being the kind of support that is loving and accepting, but hey, pal, I'm not just going to pat you on the back if this happens every other week. I'm going to hug you and then I'm going to kick your ass and say, what can I do, if anything, to help you?
Yes.
Absolutely. That's what community is all about, is that loving accountability, to get us to where we want to be.
Yeah, that's kind of
Absolutely.
why I'm called the fair and firm. Doctor, I'm
I
quite
like that.
firm.
I like that. Amazing. Well, again, our community just has asked so many insightful questions, Connie. We are going to save the rest of them for our bonus episode. That is for our community members and our patrons.
That's
So
so
if you
smart.
guys, yeah, so if you are listening and you're like, oh, I want to know the answer to these questions, for $5 a month, you can become a podcast supporter. And or you could always join the Berry Nation support community and get the same answers. These are the questions, just as a little foreshadowing that we've
Okay.
received. The first one is that, given the biological need to eat to sustain life, unlike some other addictions, are there suggestions on how to navigate this, as we can't necessarily go cold turkey? The second one is, as a society, how can we work towards the common goal of reducing the shame of food addiction? And the last one is there research on how, why, and when food addictions manifest? So these are some pretty hard-hitting conversations that we're going to have in that bonus episode.
Ooh, it was hard for me to keep my mouth shut. I just want you to know
I
that.
just want to dive in and start
I
answering. I
know.
want to start.
Her eyes popping out. Awesome. Well, Connie, if there is one thing that you would like our listeners, watchers to leave this conversation with, what would that be?
It would be take a lesson from both of you, which was admit what you know to be the truth. And it may take you however long it takes you to get there. But when you know, admit it to yourself and then confide in somebody else and get whatever the help you need, because the kind of help people need is different. So get whatever kind of help you need, whether it's from your bariatric support community, whether it's from a best friend, whether it's from a coach or a therapist, get the help that you need.
Couldn't have said it any better. Thank you, Connie, for joining
thank you
us.
Guys, not only for having me, but for what you're doing.
Thank you. Where can people connect with you?
Well, my website is ConnieStapletonPhD.com and my social media is at CStapletonPhD or at ConnieStapletonPhD.
Wonderful. We'll link those in the show notes as well. So if you would like to connect with Dr. Stapleton, you are more than welcome to do so. We'll also link all of her books that she has authored, and we'll also link the book that she mentioned earlier. I think it was Food Junkies. We'll link that as well.
Thanks. And I have the podcast, Berry Aftercare, which is very different than yours. And it's all the head stuff. So if people yes. want more of the head stuff, it's all head stuff.
Perfect. We'll link that in the show notes as well. So you should be able to find everything Connie Stapleton in our show notes, in our link in bio on Instagram, and within the Berry Nation membership community.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Of course. Jason, would you like to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Stapleton, we also want to thank you for all that you do in this community as well, because you've been an advocate, as you said, for, 20 plus years, and we can't thank you enough, because we need all the advocation we can get, and we appreciate the work that you're doing. And for everyone that in the community who continues to like, share, and subscribe, we appreciate you guys so much. Please continue to leave the ratings on the podcast, reviews on your favorite podcast players, as well as our YouTube channels. The likes, the shares, the subscribes are all adding up. You're telling as many people as you can, because the help is needed. And, we're all here to help give that. So we appreciate you guys for all that you've done. Just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.